Real quick, before we get into the show, I wanted to share a new service called Getida that Ken and I have been using that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for firing the man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?
Welcome everyone to the Firing the Man podcast, a show for anyone who wants to be their own boss. If you sit in a cubicle every day and know you are capable of more, then join us. This show will help you build a business and grow your passive income streams in just a few short hours per day. And now your hosts, serial entrepreneurs, David Schomer and Ken Wilson.
Welcome everyone to the Firing the Man podcast. On today's episode, we are joined by John Muscarello, a seven-figure e-commerce seller and founder of SideHustleExperiment.com. Today, we will be discussing John's path in entrepreneurship that started by selling furniture on Craigslist to eventually firing the man in 2019. John now runs his own e-commerce business full-time where he focuses on Amazon and eBay. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So to start off the episode, can you please share with our listeners a little bit about your background and in your path to becoming an e-commerce entrepreneur?
Yeah, so I started, as you said, flipping furniture. I really just got inspired. I had some issues with the man over a raise that I didn't get, and that kind of sparked the journey. And I saw Gary Vee. This was right around the flip challenge. I don't know if you guys remember that. Okay. But you see, you had to flip like $100,000, like 2019 or something like that. So I did that, and I was like, oh, you know what? I don't know. I always thought reselling was weird, or I don't know what it was. But then when I started him going to garage sales, I'm like, this guy's a millionaire negotiating like a 25 cents off like a stuffed animal. And I was like, huh, this is interesting. Like, I could do this. Like, if he's doing it, why can't I do it? And then I just started with furniture, started doing Craigslist to Facebook Marketplace. This was right around where Facebook Marketplace was kind of new. It was kind of like the wild, wild west. You could get like so much higher prices there. And then I'm originally from New York. I live in Pennsylvania right now. And I went home for the holidays and people wanted to buy furniture. And I was like, okay, like no problem, I'll be back in 5 days. And they're like, nah, like we need it now. And I missed out on like $2,000 to $3,000. And I was like, man, like I need something that like I don't have to physically be there. You know, furniture is big and bulky, like a limited apartment, like this at the time, like not working. Well, it was working, but like it's not how I wanted to grow it. Came across a YouTube video on how to sell books on Amazon. Kind of thought it was a scam, but like I'm a big like follow the process kind of person. So I just followed the process, started scanning books, sent in the first batch. They sold, I don't know, like 3 weeks later. I just basically went all in, thrifting for about a year, then eventually graduated to bulk books, got a warehouse, that whole thing, bulk books. And then when restock limits kind of hit, I just didn't want to do merch fulfill books. And like, that's kind of, you need to do that now if you're going to do bulk. And I didn't want to do that. So I transitioned to online arbitrage, and that is my entire business right now.
So it's sounds like you started Gary Vee with the challenge kind of sparked you and you're like, oh, let me check this out. So you did that. You were like, yeah, this is it. And then started on Amazon selling books and then ramped it up from there. Then you noticed, you know, let me try online arbitrage, retail arbitrage. Maybe it's not there. You know, it's not a good fit. So now in 23, where do you see the most opportunity? Do you see the most opportunity in online arbitrage? And what are some things that you've like stopped spending time on at all besides, you know, maybe reselling books? I mean, is there anything else that you stopped and ramped up more time on something else?
All online arbitrage. We kind of stopped doing eBay as well. Just really doubled down. I just realized I was trying to run the book business, the online arbitrage business, an eBay store, and then like merch fulfilled, and then all the social media stuff. And it just was not working. So I just doubled down on online arbitrage. And that's kind of when everything changed. I do think online arbitrage, there's definitely still a lot of opportunity. It's kind of one of those things where I've been doing this almost 5 years now. And you could definitely just see like trends. Like to be a bookseller used to be like really cool. And then you go to Bullet Books and that's even cooler. Now no one wants to be a bookseller. Then the rage was like RA, and now it's online arbitrage. Now online arbitrage, people are going to wholesale. So I think a lot of opportunity, it seemed like almost online arbitrage was almost becoming like a little saturated, but now a lot of those people want to go the wholesale route. So I do think there's going to be a ton of opportunity at online arbitrage. So yeah, I definitely think there's a big future in online arbitrage, and it's a little easier for just like the normal person to get started doing online arbitrage, because like you don't have to move in a whole, like you could literally just go to like walmart.com and just start buying stuff. Like if you work during the day, you could do it at midnight, or you could do it in the morning, like it doesn't matter. So I think that's a really good place for people to start.
One follow-up question for the listeners that maybe, I think a lot of our listeners focus on private label. So for the listeners that maybe have no idea what OA or online arbitrage is, can you maybe give a 10,000 foot view of like step one through step seven of how that process works?
So online arbitrage, private label, obviously you create your own brand or an iteration of something you know of. Online arbitrage is the total opposite. So you're basically selling an established brand. So if you were selling like, let's say Nike has a sale on their website. Let's say they have like, let's just say like, I don't know, the new hottest sneaker is on sale. It's like 50% off. You buy it for 50, it's selling on Amazon for 150. So you're going to buy it. It's going to come to your house or a prep center. I use a prep center. And basically what you'll do is you'll send it to Amazon warehouse. And then once someone buys it for 150, then you kind of split after fees and stuff, whatever Amazon does. So basically you're selling already established brands. You don't have to do any advertising or PPC or kind of bring awareness. Everyone knows what Nike is. You're really just taking advantage of these companies that spent billions of dollars on marketing over the last 20 years and just kind of finding these little opportunities when stuff's on sale, or people just spend more money on Amazon because it's just more convenient.
What kind of spread are you looking for on? So you're going out and let's stick with the Nike shoe example. So you're buying at 100, you're selling at 150. Obviously Amazon's going to take their cut, their 15% cut or whatever category you're in. I don't know if you would have PPC, but what's the spread that you're looking for between buying and selling?
So typically we're looking for 30%. For apparel, it's more closer to 40% because of returns. Almost our whole business was apparel probably last year. Now we're really getting out of apparel just because of the returns are just brutal. And there's a lot of other opportunities like health, beauty, just everyday items that people are going to buy, especially who knows what's going to happen with the world, but you just kind of want essentials and stuff. Like not everyone's going to buy those hype shoes should something like we go into a recession or whatever is going to happen. So it's more essentials for me. So yeah, I'm looking for usually 30%. And then like anything else, I'm sure you guys have like, you know, the rules are always breakable in certain situations. So there's definitely some situations if you can move volume, like yeah, I'll take like 15-20%. If it's easy to buy, like I'm not touching it, a prep center is doing it. So if the numbers make sense, I'm also fine to do that.
Now, are there ever any instances where you're drop shipping? So making the sale, drop shipping from the site that you would initially buy, or is that a different thing?
No, that's different. I think that's against Amazon's terms of I don't know how you have to do it legit, because I think there's actually prep centers that are like you can drop ship and they kind of like change out the box or whatever. Yeah, I don't do that.
So John, you're purchasing these Nike shoes, walmart.com, you know, or wherever you're getting them on clearance, and then you're directly shipping them to the prep center. They go directly into Amazon FBA, right? Is that okay? So you had mentioned like apparel. You were focusing on apparel exclusively for a long time. Then you notice, oh, the returns are coming in. They're killing us. Their, you know, margins are compressed. You had mentioned a couple of other categories. Where do you think the most opportunity is for resellers or online arbitrage in specific categories? Have you found any that are like laser hot that, you know, maybe I know sometimes Amazon decreases the commissions in certain categories to like promote more people to sell. So is there anything that's like razor hot right now,
like a lot of stuff has like cooled off. There was like a time where like during the holidays, there were like these Stanley Cups. I'm sure you've seen them before, that you could get them for like $30 and sell them for like $90 on Amazon. Like a lot of this stuff is driven by TikTok. So like if an influencer is doing something on TikTok or has a water bottle or wearing a certain bag or whatever, that could definitely start like trends. So always kind of like on the lookout for stuff like that. And like kind of the best way to find out about that kind of stuff is just to have a pretty strong network where like you're kind of just sharing leads or like, hey, did you see this? Or I'm selling this right now. And you can kind of crowdsource this kind of stuff. You can get data much quicker than like testing it yourself. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of opportunity in pretty much any category. I like to tell people, like, start with what you know. You know, if you're really into video games, I'm sure you know like when a hot release is coming out or what's hard to get or whatever. I don't know anything about video games, but I think like if you start with what you know or stuff you normally buy, because like you know when the sales are, you kind of know like the best place to get that. So that's always kind of like a good place to start.
Yeah, I really like that advice, like sticking into the lane that you know, so you don't make decisions. You know, you'll have like a competitive advantage over other resellers that, you know, they don't know that category. Another question is, you know, you're shopping and you find a good deal and it's the margin is 50%. You can make a 50% margin. How deep do you go? Do you just buy one? What if they have 10 of them? Do you buy all 10? And how do you like calculate that?
So when I started, I was definitely more conservative because I didn't really know what I was doing. So now like kind of the test buy process for me is basically if it's under $50, I'll buy like 10 or 12. Anything over 50 is probably like 8-ish. And then anything over like 100, it just really depends on kind of if I know the brand or I've never sold. It just really depends. Probably like 5 or 6. And then if the test buy goes well, then I'm probably like doubling or tripling the test buy at this point, if I could still get it. I think a lot of people fall into the trap of, oh my God, like this sale, like it's not going to happen again. Like they always happen again. Sometimes like I've been doing this now online arbitrage for at least a year. And like sometimes like when you're like this sale never happened again, like a better sale happened. You're like, damn, like this wasn't the best price. So they usually always happen again. Yeah, there's that kind of stuff that like maybe like not going to come around again. But for the most part, most of the stuff comes around again. And, you know, a lot of the times, you know, you don't want to bet the farm on everything. I'm very wide. I'm not very deep. When I do go deep, it's like very, very tested because things, I mean, you guys know things could just like change and who knows what could happen. So you always want to kind of be a little safe, but also aggressive at the same time. You just got to go with your risk tolerance.
Okay, fair enough. One more quick one, then I'll bounce it over to David. That just got me thinking earlier, like when you said, oh, like the trending thing, like online arbitrage, you definitely want to try to catch a trend because the velocity is just going to spike, BSR go crazy. Do you ever look at the, I think Amazon, it's not super relevant to private label, but definitely for resellers is they release, I think it's a weekly Amazon search term volume, and you'll see like weird search terms up there, you know, like, and I think like, oh, you know, maybe it's like TikTok influencer pushed out this huge thing. And so everybody's on Amazon looking to buy it. Do you ever look at those?
I don't, but I think I might have to start doing that because that sounds like there could be like a lot of good data in there to kind of either look at or like to generate ideas of like other stuff that I could buy.
It popped in my head and I was like, oh, that's, and I wonder if that's it. David, over to you.
Yeah, I've been making a habit of looking at that, and it's kind of funny to see what's trending. Like last week, I think it was Cardi B lip gloss, but it's different. Like there's nothing that shows up in the top 10 like consistently. And so anyway, yeah, that'd be a good spot to check out. So anyway, let's dive into product selection. Yeah, you know, let's start with, are you doing anything to identify what maybe a hot prospect is versus not? And this could relate to, you know, price point, category, size. Is there anything that you're looking for during like the initial product selection process?
So we use Keepa a lot now. It's mostly, we're using Keepa a ton. So it's really just, we're looking for brands that are just very arbitrageable where, you know, if there's one item. Okay, a couple things. So we're looking for items or brands that Amazon doesn't sell. So for example, Amazon does not sell Nike. I don't know, they had a spat a couple of years ago and I don't know, Nike stopped selling on there for whatever reason. So that's like obviously a very safe brand. Amazon's not going to come on that listing. Nike's not going to give an IP alert. So I mean, it's pretty safe. So we're kind of looking for brands like that, but it's just in different categories. I mean, in beauty, health and household. And yeah, once you kind of find a brand, brand, my like strategy I really like to do is just go into Keepa, pull up that brand, and then start putting in some filters, like make sure Amazon's not on it, maybe put in a price range or a rank range, and then kind of see what else I could find. This works really well when like a site is having like a pretty big sale throughout the whole site, because really just like searching, copying, pasting, all this stuff, you're literally just in Keepa like, hey, this is what we're typically looking for. Like, what products like potentially match that? Like, does the website have that on sale? And it goes much, much quicker that way. So yeah, we're just really looking for brands that Amazon doesn't sell and that just has like a pretty good margin, decent velocity. And yeah, this is pretty safe to sell.
You know, say you run this analysis on 10 products and you decide to go out and purchase 10 of those products. What percentage of those are heroes and what percentage of them are losers?
So I'd probably say at this point, probably like conservatively, like 70% is usually pretty good. And 30%, I do a lot of test buying. So I'm always just kind of looking, like I'm test buying something. I go in with the mindset of like, this could break even or you're going to lose $2 or $3, but I kind of want to see what happens. There'll be some where I'll go in and just take a loss of like $2 to $3 because I want to see like how quickly it sells. And to take like a $12 loss on 4 items is really kind of makes sense for me, because when that comes back into stock or is on sale, then I'm going to buy like 20 or 30 of them because I have like data saying it sells at this price point or it doesn't or whatever. So it just kind of really weeds out things quickly. But yeah, it's about 70-30. Some stuff looks really good and then a lot of other people come on the listing and the price tanks, or there's just other things that could happen, or the brand gives an IP complaint. But yeah, I would say it's about like 70-30. But when it was like, I would say it was like probably the opposite when I got started, probably like 30-70.
Okay. No, that's really good. And I think that's an important metric for people to hear, because if they do try this out, doesn't pan out, that doesn't mean that it's a failure. Most people that get into this, their first product does not go great. And so, but if you stick with it, like there is a percentage of them that do very well. So appreciate you sharing that with us. So the last question I have on product selection is, do you have any products that you just, it's consistent every month, you're ordering 10, selling 10, or is it more likely to kind of have like, here's a one-time sale and I'm going to capitalize on this, but there's a chance once I sell out of these, I may never do this again?
I have both. I would say having things that you could probably sell every month is a little bit more on like the rare side. I do have some of them, but it's more like I always look at it, Amazon and Keepa charts almost as like the stock market. Like you're just looking at the prices, you could see the charts, like a lot of the stuff that we do. So let's say we buy like 10 or 20 units and they all sell out, before we're going to order like 40 or 50, we're looking at the Keepa chart. We want to see, you know, has the seller account went up? Is the price still stable? Kind of all that kind of stuff. And if the answer is no, then we kind of just table that. And then we'll look back in 2 or 3 months. And usually the price does recover, the seller count goes down. And then that's when we'll buy like the 40 or 50. Like we know the 10 or 20 sold. And as like to keep it, the seller count is going down, we're starting to buy like right before it bottoms out. So when it does bottom out, like we'll have stock at Amazon ready to go and kind of sell before everyone catches on. So I feel like we do a lot of that. It's just kind of looking back at old stuff and just like kind of like, okay, like, you know, the offer count's falling, time to kind of double down on this if it went well, and then kind of get stuff in there. And yeah, there's definitely some stuff that's consistent. Most of the stuff that's consistent is like almost hard to keep in stock because it's just hard to get. There's like something we're trying to get now that it's just been looking for like the last 2 or 3 weeks. It's only one store sells it and like they've just been out of stock. And so just waiting for that to come back in stock, and we're just buy as much as we can.
Next question I have is, now for all the listeners listening to this and thinking like, oh man, how would I keep up with like so many of these products, scanning around, finding them all? Are you in spreadsheet land, or do you have software tools that you use to find these and keep track of all of these?
Mainly spreadsheets, Google Sheets. We use a plugin called SellerAmp, and basically it's like an on-screen calculator, but it does a lot of other stuff as well. And you could kind of export data into a spreadsheet or to a Google Doc. So we're using a lot of that. There's really nothing that kind of is out there just yet that kind of does all that. I feel like it's just hard. Like, there's just so many things people are looking at or things that are could happen. Like, ideally, like, it'd be great if I could, if like my spreadsheet was like a software and like every day, like, I don't know, it was like somehow pulling in Keepa data and be like, hey, you should buy this right now. Like, the numbers change to like what you want them to be. But it's just a lot of manual checking, a lot of stuff. Like, we have a sheet that's like out of stock. So these are profitable products, but they're not in stock right now. So a lot of people just pass those up, but like we'll go back and kind of check every week to see like, hey, is this back in stock? And a lot of the times it does come back in stock. Some will buy then. But yeah, it's just a lot of spreadsheets and just trying to keep track. Like, we have a list of everything we've ever bought, probably once a quarter. Yeah, about once a quarter, we'll go through that. Because there's just a lot of stuff. Like, once you get to like a high volume, you just forget about all the stuff you bought or like brands or certain things. So it's just always like, oh, I forgot about this. And usually we stop buying it because it's not profitable anymore. But usually when we go back, if the seller count has went down, usually we'll buy again, if it makes sense.
This next question has to do with your Instagram account. And for those of you who, to our listeners that don't follow, go follow Side Hustle Experiment. Two things on this. One, you had a post the other day. It said, here's a metric that most Amazon sellers don't track, and that was return rates. And I asked myself, well, what is our, for each one of our brands, what's our return rate? And I did not clearly have an answer to that. I would say around 5%, but I couldn't say with any degree of certainty. And that is a big deal. And so this is not a question, more of a shout out. So my question is, on your Instagram profile, it says 7-figure e-com seller and ADHDer. And so as a fellow ADHDer, curious, tell us about the gift of ADHD.
Like, with Amazon, it's a gift and a curse because, you know, everything's all over the, like, you just want to, like, your mind is so curious and you're always looking for new opportunities. And sometimes it's just really hard to focus just on what you have in front of you. But I feel like, yeah, the real gift is just like, for me anyway, like just that hyper focus, like just the ability to really just drill down or look at something for 4 or 5 hours and just like, just really get in there and kind of go for it. And then, yeah, I think when you have ADHD too, you're always curious and you're maybe thinking a little bit more outside the box. Like, you're not really, you pay attention to the rules, but like you kind of make your own rules in a certain way, or like things to make like sense to you, you have to do certain things. So for me, I feel like that's kind of like one of the biggest advantages, is just, you know, being able to be like hyper focused for long periods of time. And then I feel like sometimes when you just get obsessed with something, like you just can't let it go, which plays really well into growing a business.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah. The conversation around that has changed. It used to be a disability, a learning disability. Yeah. That's what it was called. And yes, there's definitely some challenges, but also there are some advantages, and it's good to hear people talk about them. So
I want to pivot a little bit, John, and talk about firing the man. That's kind of what our podcast focuses on, you know, quitting your day job to pursue passions and not have to work for the man and recover your time. And so if you can share with the audience now, back a few years, it looks like you fired a man a while back. If you can share with the audience, like your mindset around then and what did you do to prepare for that, and kind of just share a little bit about your experience.
If you want tips and strategies on how to start, grow, and monetize your business online, check out the Digital Revolution podcast with Eli Adams. We interview digital experts from around the world that share their personal stories. They talk about what they're currently working on and where they see the future going. But most importantly, they share tactics in their specific area of expertise with the hope of helping you improve your digital presence online. You can listen to the Digital Revolution podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, or simply click on the link in the show notes below.
The whole journey started with, I got a job, kind of negotiated like, hey, after like 3 months, if I was doing a good job, they'd give me like X more. I did that or whatever. And then at the end of the year, when everyone was getting raises, they're like, we already gave you a raise. And then that kind of like set me off. I was like, no, like we negotiated, like that was like starting salary. Like, we're not taught, like, so I was like, you know what? I need to be in control of my money. And that kind of what got me on the Gary Vee path. So what got me to kind of quit my job? I always wanted to work for myself. My dad was always entrepreneur. He owned restaurants and bakeries and stuff like that. So I've always worked for him growing up. And basically, yeah, it just came down. I was just tired of like the nonsense at work. Once you have like a side business, it starts to get a little harder as it grows and starts to make money. You're starting to make more money than kind of your salary at work and kind of sitting there like, well, I feel like make this in a weekend. Like, why am I still here? So basically for me to prepare, I kind of wanted, for me, I'm definitely more conservative. So I had 6 months of like personal expenses. I think I had like $20,000 to $30,000 in the business account. So I was realized like, if I'm going to do this full time, obviously I'm going to be spending more money, whether that's on equipment or for inventory or stuff like that. And I think one of the best things I did is I basically had like a path, like I basically pretended to like pay myself out of the business account. So before I quit, I was like, okay, I'm going to take, let's just say I was going to take $2,000. So every 2 weeks, I would take $1,000 out of the business account and like see how it felt. Like, okay, like is the business account cool? Like, does this feel like stressful? And I think a lot of people think like, oh yeah, like taking $2,000 out is like no big deal. But like until it leaves, it's like, oh, okay, like, yeah, like I kind of need that for X, Y, or Z, or it's more stressful now that I'm taking that out. So I think it's like, that's almost the best thing you could do. Another thing I did was I basically took a whole week off of work. I did this twice. I did this once in the fall and then once in the spring to kind of and pretended that like I was full time just to see like, oh, do you like this? Like, because you could like do it. And after 2 days, you're like, yeah, this is stupid. Like, I could just do this on the weekend. Like, I don't really need to do this full time. And like every time I did it, like it worked out really well. And I was like, oh man, like this would be amazing. Like, if I could just do this full time. So I was like, really like, okay, this is exactly what I want to do. So I think there's definitely ways to like test it out if you're kind of on the fence without kind of, you know, taking the full leap, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I like a couple of things I want to highlight on that. One is you did a test run on pulling money out and paying yourself and seeing if that impacted business operations. I think that's very, very smart. The second thing you did was you took a week off your full-time job and then did a full-time, you know, working for yourself to see if you liked it. And they both panned out for you. They both worked. And so I really like that. No, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that.
So before we get into the fire round, this is more of a Amazon-based question. Pricing. Let me just start this off by saying, there are so many things on Amazon that are out of your control, like FBA fees and referral fees and storage and 9-month storage and long, I can go on and on and on. However, we still kind of have control of price sometimes. And so curious, any rules of thumb that you apply when you're analyzing a spread between what you can buy and what you can sell at?
Yeah, so we're always looking at the 90-day buy box price in Keepa to kind of see, you know, how has it fluctuated? There's just a lot you could learn. That's probably one of the most important things to look at. There's a lot of instances where the price you see like right now on Amazon is lower than the 90-day buy box. And that could just be for like a ton of reasons. Like someone's repricer is like, I don't know, not set up correctly, or they're just trying to liquidate, or they just got it for a lower price. So you just want to make sure the buy box is rotating and you're getting, and people are getting like the price that you think you could get. You'll see like, okay, hey, if we're trying to sell it for $50, it could be like someone's selling for $55, they're getting it for like 5% of the time. But if 90% of the time, people are like in the 40s, then that's kind of a big red flag that, you know, you're probably not going to get 50. It's only like 5% of the time that this happens. Why does that happen? Who knows? Like, it could be stock issues or whatever. But we just kind of want to be like, you know what? 90 days, this is usually what's happening, or even 30 days, depending on like what kind of flip it is. Sometimes it's like a really quick turn, or sometimes it's just like, hey, this is a long play, but let's look at the 90 day. I think a lot of people pass up products because it's like, oh, this isn't profitable. But if you dig into kind of the buy box, like if anything's close, I'm definitely looking at the buy box to kind of see, you know, what's happening. Is it rotating? And then if it's just close in general, like we have a spreadsheet of stuff that's not profitable, but it's close. So like a sale could swing that, the seller count going down can swing it in a profitable direction. So we're kind of looking at that as well when it comes to pricing. But yeah, like you said, it's sometimes hard, like when other people come in at lower prices or whether they mean to or not. And then I don't know, once you lose the buy box at that higher price, it's really hard to get it back up to where it was.
David, you want to cover anything else before we get into the fire round?
Yeah. Can you discuss your coaching program and how people can find out more if they're interested?
Yeah, sure. So the coaching program, I do one-on-one coaching. You could sign up through my Instagram. And then I have a partner that we do a boot camp. It's 5 weeks. You can find out more about that in the FBA Insider Discord. So it's a free Discord. We do like weekly calls in there. There's a ton of information in there about how, you know, to better sell on Amazon. There's tools, there's templates. And basically it's 5 weeks. It's kind of like a full emerging strategy, kind of everything we wish we learned, just kind of all the important stuff. Sometimes courses just don't cut it. Like you just kind of need, it's really like small group. It's like 9 to 10 people and it's kind of customized to them, what they need. It's group coaching calls, two of those. And just we teach them how to like really source, not just kind of like the generic way that's like on YouTube. And yeah, I find that like so much more fulfilling than almost selling on an Amazon. I just really enjoy that. You know, there's one person who's about to quit their job, so that's cool. So yeah, I just really enjoy doing that.
Very nice. Awesome. Very nice. All right, Ken, let's get the fire round started.
All right, John, are you ready?
Ready.
What is your favorite book?
Favorite book? I would say $100 Million Offers by Alex Hormozi.
Awesome. I like that one. What are your hobbies?
Hobbies, I'd say recently I'm getting like back in fitness. So definitely going to the gym. I love social media, YouTube. So kind of learning more about that stuff. I'm always kind of learning about that and just, I don't know, just hanging out with the community, connecting with the community. I just love doing that kind of stuff.
Awesome. What is one thing that you do not miss about working for the man?
The schedule of meetings.
All right, last one. What do you think sets apart successful e-commerce entrepreneurs from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
I think it's more just probably fear. Like, I just don't know. I kind of looked at it. I'm probably more on the older side of the online arbitrage sellers. A lot of them started at like 17, 18 or whatever. And I just kind of looked at it when I quit 5 years ago. I was like, well, like, this is the time to do it, right? I was 32 at the time. And I think I was just like, you know what? Like, if this doesn't work in 2 years, it's like, well, you just get a job and then you still have like 20 years to like kind of like regroup. I'm like, that's plenty of time to do so. So I feel like just get started. I mean, it sounds, I don't know, snobby or whatever, but sometimes the worst case is just like you just lose some money. Like, it's easy to make money. It's easy to like, okay, so you lose $100. Like, all right, don't go out to dinner for a month or whatever. You know, there's something there you could cut for a month to like get it back or another way you can make it. So I think, yeah, just get started, give it a try. Don't let it like intimidate you. I was saying this the other day in some YouTube video. It's like, I'm doing this program 75 hard and there's this all this like stipulations or whatever. One, it's like an outdoor workout. I'm like, oh, it's really going to suck if it rained. And it like rained, I think, 6 days into it. And I just like put a hoodie on. I was like, no, it really wasn't that bad. But like, I was like, oh, I don't want to do it because it rained. But like, it was like, oh, you know, it wasn't really that bad. If you're like prepared, it's like, whatever, it doesn't matter. So I think that was kind of like eye-opening. It's like, we always like for Amazon too, it's like, oh, the returns, the price tanking, the this, the that. And then like it happened. You're like, all right, like I'm out like $2, like it's fine. Like, you know what I mean? It's like 1% of the 99%. That's kind of bad.
David, over to you to close out the show.
All right. If people are interested in connecting with you or learning more about your coaching program, what's the best way to get in touch?
Shoot me a DM on Instagram at Side Hustle Experiment. I also have a YouTube channel at Side Hustle Experiment. And yeah, those are probably the two places I'm the most active. And obviously our Discord as well.
All right. Sounds great. Well, want to thank you for being a guest on the Firing the Man podcast and looking forward to staying in touch.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for having me. This is a lot of fun.
Before you go, we wanted to share a new service that Ken and I have been using called Getida that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, Getida.com, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for Firing the Man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission-free. How much money does Amazon owe you?